What's up, Breakthrough Success listeners? Mark Bird at the podcast, the coach here, helping people launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts. And one of the things that really stops people from being able to launch something successfully, be able to make money, be able to accomplish the big goal they're going after, are some destructive habits and addictions that can really derail people who might have great potential, but they're held back by these things. For some people, like the addictions, we could be thinking drugs and alcohol, all things like that. But destructive habits, that could be like watching TV and things that we, other things that we may not be fully aware of, but are still impacting us nevertheless. So our guest is going to share the hidden key to ending all that bad stuff so that we can achieve more of our goals. He's a physician and educator in the fast-growing field of integrative and functional medicine with a particular focus on stress management and ending destructive habits. Our guest offers private stress management consultations, volunteering as a health consultant for St. Matthew's House, and serving as a clinician for Signify Health. Our guest for this episode of Breakthrough Success is none other than Bill Bergman. Bill, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks so much, Mark. I'm so grateful to have the opportunity to share with your audience about what my research and the application of this research has been to really help people to, as you say, get over the what can be significant barriers to realizing their full potential. And I'm really just grateful to you for giving me the opportunity to share this information.
Well, Bill, I'm very happy to have you on Breakthrough Success and being able to get through destructive habits, get through addictions. That's something that a lot of people would benefit from. So I'm wondering if you can share with us. I mean, I know you've helped a lot of people with this stuff. I know you've seen a lot of people with this stuff. What do you think is like that first key step people have to take to get on that road to kicking out the bad habit?
Right. Well, a lot of the work that I do with people is based on really some very cutting edge brain research, which is really in many ways kind of giving us a new perspective on how to end unwanted habits, addictions, and this kind of thing. You know, the prevailing viewpoint, even amongst the professional health professional or mental health professional community, is that unless we delve deeply into a person's kind of past, their personal issues that might have been going on that created this destructive habit, then unless we deal deeply with the personal issues, we really just won't be successful in having a person end the habit. But it turns out that that's not true. It turns out that the latest brain science is clarifying for us that the key that I kind of say a hidden key because it's just not well recognized as yet, but the hidden key for ending any kind of unwanted, destructive habit, addiction, is in understanding how the brain forms the habit and how the habit is driven by the urge or the craving to eat, to think or to act in a certain way, even though we really don't want to be thinking in a certain way, we don't want to be acting in a certain way. We have an urge or a craving. And it isn't, as it turns out, necessary to get to the deep psychological and personal factors that might have been responsible for developing the habit in the first place. But once the habit is well established, that if we can just understand and see and experience the urge in a new way, we can more easily dismiss it and on that basis not act on it. And then as a consequence, the brain pathways that were reinforced by repetition actually begin to weaken. And as the urge weakens, the feeling I need to act or to think in a certain way, as that urge diminishes, well, with the end of the urge, it's the end of the habit.
And it is interesting that you mentioned like urge and craving is like, I've read different books on habits. Like they talk about like the habit loop, they talk about cue, routine, reward, but urge and craving, those are like, I mean, I feel like a lot of people, they know the destructive habit is destructive, but they have that urge or that craving that brings them to living that habit and continuing to do the thing they know they shouldn't be doing. So you mentioned that like getting rid of the urge, being able to diminish it would change the habit. So how can we take action on that so that the urge craving doesn't affect us anymore?
Well, first of all, we have to understand what the urge is. The urge, the craving, these are feelings. These are feelings. And while originally we might have developed an unwanted, what turns out later to be an unwanted or destructive habit, at the beginning, it might have even been a kind of innocent desire to just feel better. You know, to just somehow have some immediate gratification, whatever. And this is true, by the way, what I'm sharing is true no matter what form the habit may take, no matter how it expresses itself. Ultimately, at the beginning, it was because we wanted to just feel better. So we kind of did something. Maybe we didn't necessarily feel it was that bad, or we were just sort of experimenting or whatever it is, but there's pleasure associated with it. And as a consequence, a portion of the brain that we refer to as the lower brain, it's actually the brainstem, it's literally lower in the skull, and it's the lower part of the brain. It's also referred to as the brainstem, the limbic system. But this lower brain is responsible for one thing, and that is our survival. So the lower brain is what allows us to actually live. I mean, it controls, it's the impulses that control our breathing, our heartbeat. I mean, virtually all of the physical activities that are necessary for our survival, including procreation, which of course is then the sexual energy. All of this is really essentially coming from a lower brain that from an evolutionary point of view, it's kind of identified as kind of almost like a reptilian brain. They refer to the lower brain as reptilian because it doesn't have any kind of rational thought. It's really just a kind of survival machine that's operating in order for us to survive. And the thing about this lower brain is that with repetition, the lower brain kind of draws the conclusion. It's not a thinking kind of thing, but it's just the way that it was created. With repetition and reinforcement, the lower brain actually begins to think that if something is repeated, it must be important for survival. And on the basis of it mistakenly believe that this kind of activity, whatever it is necessary survival, it will continue to send stronger and stronger impulses from the lower brain, which is what creates the feeling, the urge, the craving. And we fortunately have the higher brain. The higher brain is located at the higher up in the skull, and that's the seat of our intelligence, of our rationality, of our compassion, a capacity for love, being unselfish, you know, the kind of more elevated human qualities, we could say even spiritual qualities, that really define us as a human being. But through repetition, the lower brain kind of begins to exert too great an influence. And as a consequence, is continually sending out these signals that we need to do something, even though the rational part of us, the conscientious part of us, really knows that it's really not in our best interest. So we find ourselves almost kind of getting two conflicting messages simultaneously. And this is where it gets kind of interesting, because we can kind of feel like we're fighting ourselves, a part of us telling us not to do something because we know it's not really healthy for us. It's not really in our best interest. It's not really going to serve us in terms of our goals. But on the other hand, we kind of get a sense, again, through the lower brain, that we do want to do this, that in fact, it's important to do this, that, you know, it comes up with all kinds of justifications and rationalizations for doing something we really don't want to do. And unless we see the truth of this, we can feel that we're sort of at war within ourselves. But it really is not true that the lower brain is really generating anything which is of real meaning or significance. It's just, it's a survival mechanism. The more we begin seeing it this way, the more we can separate our higher consciousness, our higher attributes from the impulses from the lower brain. I hope that is, at least to some degree, kind of creating some clarity, Mark.
I mean, it's interesting you bring up different parts of the brain. I mean, the part that, so what I'm getting is that the part that comes from the, like, doing the bad habit, it's a survival mechanism. Like for some, like people feel like this destructive habit or this addiction is some kind of survival mechanism. It is this, I can see, like, you could argue like the comfort zone itself is the survival zone rather than the comfort zone. And getting out of that comfort survival zone is what allows you to break those habits. So I think one of the things we should explore a little bit is, like, how do we get out of that comfort zone and reach our higher goals and higher thoughts as well?
Right. Well, one of the kind of ways that I help people to see that the urge in a way in which they don't have to act on it. Now, for some people, it can happen very quickly. For others, it takes time. I mean, it's just kind of how quickly we can really gain the insight. But one way that I explain it to people is, just imagine that you're driving along. You're, of course, driving. You've got your hands on the steering wheel and your foot is on the accelerator and all. But you've got a backseat driver. And that backseat driver is sitting back there. And as you're approaching an intersection, the light goes yellow, and you decide, you're driving the car, you decide you're going to stop. But meanwhile, your backseat driver is screaming there in the back, "Go through the light, go through the light, you can do it. There's no police around, and anyway, you're a good driver, go through the light." Well, you could have a sense that, gee whiz, I mean, maybe I should. But you just decide that, no, you're not going to go through the light, that you're going to stop. Well, that backseat driver just gets so upset and starts screaming at you. Well, it turns out that's an analogy of the impulses from the lower brain. But the important thing to understand is that the backseat driver actually has absolutely no control over what you do with the car. It can scream, it can do all kinds of things, but if you simply recognize that this is just the backseat driver, I'm in control, I'm driving the car, I'm not going through the red light. So as people begin to more and more gain the insight that what's coming from the lower brain, what's driving the cravings, what's driving the urges is like a survival mechanism, but we don't have to pay attention to it. That it's not really us. It just can kind of feel like us because it's happening within our own consciousness that we're actually getting the feeling we need to do something we don't want to do. But that feeling is not us. If we want to identify at all, we want to identify with the attributes of the higher brain. And what's really powerful, Mark, is that as we begin to realize the truth of this, we begin to more easily separate ourselves from the urge or the craving. And as we gain distance between ourselves, who we truly are, and just an impulse from the lower brain, then it becomes easier and easier to dismiss that urge. And as we dismiss the urge, I'm not talking about ignoring it, I'm not talking about resisting it, I'm not talking about willpower, I mean recognizing it for what it is. Just the backseat driver that has no real control over our decisions, as much as it may feel like it does, it doesn't have that power. And by not acting on it, the neurocircuits weaken. It's something called neuroplasticity. And those circuits that have been established and have been reinforced through the conditioning and the repetition, they begin to weaken. And on the other hand, we can strengthen. The other half of the equation is strengthen the healthy connections that really are a consequence of the functions of the higher brain. So it's a matter of gaining insight. At the beginning, this can all sound kind of intellectually like a lot of concepts. But with some time, sometimes, as I say, very, very quickly, other times it can take a little while. With the right coaching and all, we can really facilitate our insight. This insight leads to power. We actually find ourselves in a position where we're not any longer giving in to these urges. We're recognizing them for what they are. We're dismissing them. We're not resisting them. We're not using willpower. We're just using the power of our insight. And it actually does diminish the craving and the urge. And when the cravings and the urges diminish, with the end of that feeling, I need to act in a certain way, I don't want to act, as the cravings diminish, as the urges diminish, eventually, and it can be soon or can take a while, the habit will end at that point. Then we may still have the issues in our lives that may have been responsible for creating that destructive habit. We can deal with that, but we're no longer encumbered with the burden of having to deal with a habit or an addiction that's just getting in the way of everything we really want to do with our life.
Yeah, and I like the example you gave of like driving and like deciding to stop at the yellow light, because it really gives a clearer picture. Because I know like brain stuff could be like difficult for people, again, unless you're in that kind of thing. But I mean, like, just that picture paints a lot more of a clear image of like, you know, there's that voice in the back of our head, and we just have to stay firm with what we want to do, have the desire and purpose attached to the positive habits, the positive things that we want, and then the magic can start to happen once we really get clear on these different frameworks. And I know that if you guys want to learn more about Bill, one option is enddestructivehabits.com. There's a free special report there on how you can end destructive habits and addictions, which I do recommend. It will be in the show notes. Are there any other place we go to just find you and follow your work and continue to see what you're up to?
I think that's the best, enddestructivehabits.com, Mark. I think that would be the best place to start. You get your free special report, and then from there, the people can connect and learn more about this approach.
Well, we'll definitely throw that link in the show notes, as I mentioned before, and we'll also throw an ocean writing in the show notes as well. That's the mastermind I'm doing with a few authors who want to learn how to make six figures with their books in Florida and to January. So if you want to, if you're a New Yorker like me, or just someone who wants to escape the snow and get a lot of good knowledge on how to make six figures with your books, that's going to happen at the end of January. So link in the show notes there as well. But Bill, once again, thank you so much for coming on Breakthrough Success. It was such a pleasure having you on the show.
Thank you so much, Mark. I wish you and your audience the very, very best. Thank you.